Joe Coyote.
Cody Coates, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. A lot happened today. We have a lot to talk about.
We have a lot to talk about, but we do have some points to follow up, as always. I was on a podcast other than this one. What a surprise. But yes, I was on the Tectonic podcast. If you are a loyal listener of Diagnostics and Usage, you may remember Joe Darnell, who was on our eighth episode. He debuted the name of his new podcast called Tectonic on our show, and I was honored to be a guest on it. And
he was on our episode 8, and you were on his episode 8.
I know. I saw that, and I was like, wow, that's pretty great symmetry. But it was awesome because we didn't talk about your usual tech stuff. We kind of started talking about social networking, and I just thought it was all around a great conversation. I really like the show. Tectonic.fm /8 if you want to get to that. It'll also be in the show notes. Now, Cody, we didn't mention the show notes once last episode. I don't know if you picked that up, so I think we need to atone for that. And where can our listeners go and find our show notes for this episode?
Diagnosticsandusage.com /19, the number 19.
Oh my god, you use the forward slash. I'm so proud of you. So we an episode or two ago, we did some early Oculus Rift price predictions, I listened back just to make sure that I wasn't quoting us, incorrectly.
I don't even remember what I said.
So you guessed that the Oculus, just the Oculus alone, would be the same starting price as the Apple Watch, $349. And I said that I think it's either going to be $499 or $599. And you were a bit taken back by my prediction. But news has come out during CodeCon, Recode's big conference, that the Oculus Rift, the entire package, now this is the Rift headset and a computer, is going to cost $1,500 or around $1,500. So you got to think that that's going to be their starting price. That, in my opinion, I'm feeling better about my prediction. I think that
I think I'm still in the running. I think I can still.
Okay.
You might go over. Price is Right rules.
You're right. You're absolutely
Once
right.
Once we know the actual headset, you could be over.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I thought it was worth noting, and I felt a little sense of more confidence because I you had me really second guessing my prediction. But what do you think about that price, just in general? $1,500, was that around what you thought for the whole thing?
I think knowing that you have to buy a computer plus the headset, I think $1,500 is reasonable. Like, I don't think. I mean, I just reading the articles, I don't think it's explicit that most people are going to have to buy a new computer. Like, I think it would be silly for them to not have it run on some of the high-end Macs. So I think that it's a reasonable price. Like, $1,500 minus cost of computer, I think that's a reasonable price for a console accessory that's going to be essentially changing the way, you know, it's going to be a whole new type of game.
Well, here's what I'm scared about. Like, don't you find it interesting that I don't know if this was the CEO of Oculus. I'm not really sure who was interviewed, but don't you find it interesting that
it was the CEO.
Yeah, the CEO felt compelled to tell the total price with a computer. That's kind of making me think that this is going to have very specific requirements, and that I don't know. Like, why wouldn't he just say, oh, the Oculus headset's going to cost around this much? It's interesting that he would have to package it with the machine.
Well, I think he's setting expectations. Like, it is setting the expectation that you are going to be using pretty much a cutting-edge technology, and with that, you're going to have to make sure that you have the other technology to just get this thing going and have a decent experience. So I think it's totally reasonable for it to be there.
Well, a lot came out of CodeCon this week. So let's get into our topics. Now, I do want to preface that me and you have decided that we're going to avoid talking about WWDC type news because we are going to be recording next week's show a mere 4 days before the keynote. So we want to save all the juicy news and gossip for next week. But we still...
I can't believe WWDC is so close.
I know. It's.
I haven't been thinking about it. And now that these rumors are coming in, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like around the corner.
So CodeCon, Apple's Jeff Williams was the one being interviewed. It's interesting. CodeCon, they usually get like some kind of high up Apple executive. I believe last year's was Beats. Beats executive. It was Eddie Q and Jimmy Iovine. And then in 2012 was Tim Cook. So it's interesting. Apple likes to drop little hints here and there about what's going on. Now, I remember in 2012 when they asked Tim Cook about the rumors of a wearable, you know, he said something to the effect like the wrist is an interesting thing. And now we have a quote from Jeff Williams, which is saying the car is the ultimate mobile device. And he did the funny thing is he did not have to say that because I watched that part of the interview and the question wasn't directed to cars in particular. It was directed into like, I don't know, just like, you know, Apple's R&D efforts. But I found it very interesting that he decided to drop that piece of information now, kind of laying down the groundwork that we may see something in the future. It's interesting to see that this is still kind of swirling around the rumor mill. And
Well, it's funny because it's been swirling around the rumor mill for years. I remember like back in 2008, 2009, 10, like seeing like Apple Car mock-ups on websites and just, you know, it would, every once in a while, this rumor's been around for a while and every once in a while it pops up and now it's popping up and Apple's like, yeah.
So how was your Memorial Day, by the way? Did you have a good Memorial Day, Cody?
Memorial Day was good. We like stayed in and made awesome, awesome food and just kind of hung out. It was cloudy here, so it wasn't kind of a day to like go out and do anything. So we kind of just stayed in and made really good food.
Very nice. Well, I was coming home that Memorial Day Monday from being up in Pennsylvania in the woodsy areas. It was very nice. But the real reason that I've asked you that is Apple dropped a bit of a bombshell Memorial Day, kind of midday, Sir Jonathan Ive has got a promotion. He's now the chief design officer, two of his design co-workers, Alan Dye and Richard Howarth, are the UI VP and the industrial design VP. How did you take that news? Was it shocking? Was it just, you know, run-of-the-mill Apple just putting out new titles? Like, what were your thoughts when you saw that news pop in?
A couple things. First was, I thought it was funny that they had merged those two roles into... given both of those SVP roles to Johnny Ive, and now they're breaking them apart again. Honestly, when I thought, I was like, oh, wow, Johnny is not happy, is what I thought. He is just kind of tired of the crap, the day-to-day corporate kind of bureaucracy that you have to put up with when you're at that level of the company of, you know, paperwork. I think that's what this was. This is Johnny Ive saying, hey, Apple, I'd love to stay here, but I'm tired of checking email and filling out paperwork. Do something about it. And they were like, okay.
See, I got the same sense. And of course, you know, everyone on the internet's divided about this. Like, is this just, you know, normal, you know, this was always down the pipeline, or was this, you know, a foreshadowing? And it seems more of a foreshadowing because we had that big Johnny Ive profile where, you know, he explicitly said that he misses going to England and he misses you know, being able to do that type of thing when, you know, spending more time with his family. Like he's working 80-hour weeks you know, in the design studio, practically living there. And I agree. I think this is the beginning. I don't want to make this sound like controversial. It is the beginning of his end, meaning like he's now in this position, and I wrote about this, and maybe this is controversial, but I wouldn't be shocked if in 5 years' time he retired. And
oh, definitely.
And it's not because he doesn't have any good ideas anymore or anything like that. It's just because he's
like everyone else, he just wants to freaking retire.
He's been with the company since the 90s. Like, people forget that. Like I know he's had this this resurgence of fame in the in Apple's kind of ladder period, where we had all these big hits like the iPod and the iPhone, but like, he's been with the company since the 90s. This guy has been working his butt off for Apple and pulling all these long hours. Like, I wouldn't blame him if he wanted to retire. So that's the sense that I got, and I think that he has, especially after I read that profile on his team, which I never knew anything about his team since that, but after I read that, I feel very comfortable with the rest of his team being able to carry on when it comes to design and stuff, because they have the same work ethic, and he is taught them so much down the line, and they've brought in tons of ideas. So I think it's all around good news. But
I think it's essentially, it's the same job, just minus the paperwork.
So I got a text message from my best friend the other night, and he said, have you heard about this message that gets sent to your phone and it reboots it? Now, I have respect for my best friend, but on the other hand, maybe he's fallen under a prank of some sort. Maybe he's seen some Facebook link ad article or something, because that just didn't sound to me, it just sounded a little sketchy. So I said, can you supply me with a reputable link regarding
prove
this?
It.
And he's like, I can't find a link, but I have seen this firsthand. He's like, my girlfriend just got sent this message and her phone rebooted in front of my eyes. And I said, and he sent me a screenshot of the message. I was like, okay. Well, I was like, all right, well, wow. I mean, that's a bit crazy, because, it hasn't, the news hasn't caught wind, but sure enough, I wake up the next morning, and it was on Mac Rumors. And now it turns out that if you send the same message to the Apple Watch, it does the same thing there. It springboard crashes, the whole thing reboots. Definitely, my guess is someone was speculating. Me and a coworker were speculating about how this came out. My personal guess is that we have jailbreakers are always looking for flaws and ways and vulnerabilities to get into a phone to crack that phone and jailbreak it. And my guess is one of them found this and they realized that they couldn't use this as a vulnerability to jailbreak a phone, so they decided to figure out a different way, to spread this thing. And Apple's acknowledged it, but I thought Apple would have acted a little faster.
I thought there would already be a fix out.
Yeah, even if it's a 0.01 update, but they just said, we're going to fix this in a the next update, which makes me think maybe they will release an 8.4 on the day of the keynote, June 8th. But still,
I think they're gonna, we should take bets on this. I think 8.4 will come out. I think 8.4 should come out before, but they're not going to release it if it has all the music stuff until they announce it there.
Exactly.
It seems weird that they would, like a big security thing like this, that they would wait until the big announcement.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks from now, so maybe they should do like an 8.3.1.
Those updates, I'm sure, cost them tens of thousands of dollars to push out just with server load. And so I'm sure they're having to balance, like, do we fix this one bug for X amount of money, or do we wait and just fix it and put it in the release that we already planned? And I guess it lost out.
Yeah, so now I don't know. Now I have to, when I get a text message from an unknown source, I'm just gonna have to, just erase my phone. I don't know. Like, people.
Well, wait. Once it boots off, can you not open the Messages app anymore?
Some people are saying that you can't, and you have to do this Siri hack. So some people are saying that, like, say it does that, but if it's the last thing that that was opened, When you open the messages back up, it does it again, and it does this endless loop. So someone said, all right, we'll send a message to yourself through Siri, and since that's the most recent message, that will pop. That will somehow pop up instead of this message. So, there's you know, hacks. It's just very, it's an inconvenience. Like, you know, people have been joking. People have been putting up vines, like, you know, like, oh, when your friend's playing a song that you don't like, and then someone sends them a text message, and it, like, that's funny and all, but that could really happen. And then, like, the other thing is like, iOS has now become a big thing in the enterprise, and like, God forbid someone, you know, in the company sent something out in mass to everyone's iPhones, a disgruntled employee or something like that. You know, there's no barrier to entry here. You don't need.
I'm surprised that this hasn't been termed like messages gate or something like that. I totally thought that the press would have picked up more on this and applied the gate suffix to this thing, but it seems to kind of just been mulled over. Surprisingly.
So, yeah.
But it points out something, which is that there are still plenty of bugs in iOS to fix, which is maybe what will be happening with iOS 9, and maybe we'll see a lot of general improvements. And it's also what Google has done in their latest release.
Phenomenal segue, Cody Coates.
Did you see that segue? I thought that was pretty good.
Well, listen, no, we're done with Apple news for tonight, Cody Coates, because even though Apple's WWDC is a couple weeks away, Google had their own WWDC-like event called Google I.O. And today was their keynote this morning, and it was jam-packed with a ton of stuff. And I think...
How long was the keynote?
You know, the Google live stream, like if you try to replay it, it says 2 hours and like 40 minutes.
Damn, that's a long time to sit there.
So I have some meta notes about the keynote. They had this phenomenal digital display setup where it wrapped around the entire room. And prior to the keynote, they had a couple of awesome things. Like, A, they had this orca whale that looked really realistic, and it was floating, you know, underwater, and it was going throughout the conference room on these displays. And then they had this really... what's the word I'm looking for? It was gratuitous, maybe. Like video intro. It was so long and so tedious that, like,
you mean like that design one with the lines and the dots that Apple did and then played a million times?
Yes, but that's like a minute or so. This was a graphics thing that happened that felt like 5 to 10 minutes, and this is after they started late. So like before someone even came on stage, they had this crazy video performance, I guess you would call it. But yeah, it was pretty cool. But yeah, I think Android M is a good one to start off in our topic list, because there's a lot of things for Apple people to roll their eyes on. And they come right off the gate with Android M, saying that they're not focusing on features, they're focusing on quality end to end. And at that point, I was like, did they just read Mark Gurman's scoops and then figure out that they needed to use similar vernacular in their keynote? Because
there's a lot of just like vocabulary overlap, and I don't know how much of that is just like general Silicon Valley techie vocabulary, or if it is a just kind of like vocabulary copy of what Apple has usually been saying about things.
Because iOS 9 is supposed to focus on stability, and it's supposed to focus on performance. And when they were talking about Android M, that's what their main talking point was. But of course, it still came with features that they discussed. And the first one was pretty funny, because the first one the iPhones had since day one, pretty much, literally, and that is app permissions. So,
well, they've redone the app permissions, and I thought this was really, I can't believe that Android apps operated this way.
Well, yes. I had an Android phone, Cody Coates, back. I had a Samsung Galaxy S2 at one point in time in my life. And the way it used to work is you would say, I want to install this app. And then a sheet would come up and it would say, this app needs control of, and it pretty much said like everything. And some of the stuff was a little shady. You're like, why does this Notes app need my microphone, and why does this Notes app need my camera? And they're like, they had all these things. So now they're taking the Apple approach where you download the app, and when you need to do something that it needs access to your phone for, it will just pop up. I need access to your camera. I need access to your contacts. And it's about time, because I've read countless articles about people talking about apps that, you know, that shouldn't need access to something, but ask for it. I'm happy to see that Android is adopting that type of attitude, because it's just more safer for the customer all around.
Yeah, and so the next thing was Chrome in all apps. So essentially, it's kind of like a web view, but it is essentially a tab from Chrome being displayed inside of an app. So you get all of the functionality of Chrome, like save passwords and autocomplete and your logins and everything, but inside of another app. I think their example was
Pinterest.
Yeah.
Someone made a good point. They said this is like instant articles, but for every app. Like this Chrome tab is supposed to integrate so that it feels like you didn't leave the app, but it has all the added benefits, and it's a nice touch.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the stuff they did was just these little niceties, like Doze with where it detects the motion of the device to essentially be like, oh, the user, I've been left on the nightstand, so I'm just going to like kill all of the apps running because nothing needs to be going because the user hasn't touched me in a while. Or and then also integrating USB-C or USB-C as a charging thing.
Yeah, USB-C was nice. It was nice to see. I think we're now it's funny. I was following Twitter, you know, throughout this whole thing. Someone made a funny thing. They were like, so I can charge my Android phone with my new MacBook charger, but I can't charge my iPhone with my MacBook charger.
And you can charge your new MacBook from your Android phone.
You could. You absolutely could. So now I'm kind of curious, you know, Lightning was such an amazing initiative to get thinner devices, but now I'm kind of feeling like, is Apple?
When did they drop it?
Are they going to drop Lightning and like for the iPhone 7? Like, I know that's a short thing, but Apple knows when to cut their losses. Like, maybe USB-C
does it.
I mean, in certain aspects. In certain aspects, they know how to cannibalize other products, and they know how to. They know when things need to be replaced, but
Apple's
that's
happy
thing.
To let just shit sit around until it absolutely needs to. I think it needs an external motivator to get rid of Lightning, and I think the only thing is something like thinness or power or something like that. I don't see Lightning going anywhere soon, especially just because there's this huge accessories industry around it. I mean, they're going to lose a lot of money there.
True. No, those are great points.
They just came out with a dock with Lightning. Why
would
they get rid of that?
That is true. So the next thing that it was really impressive, and we're going to be able to talk more about this next week when we talk about upcoming stuff for WWDC, but Google Now has got a big upgrade called Now on Tap, which I kind of hate that name, but yeah. It's basically Google Now on steroids, and it's more aware.
It's contextually aware.
Yes, it's contextually aware. So the example that they used was you're in your music app and you're listening to an artist. This person was listening to Skrillex in the keynote, and they just asked Google, what is his real name? And they didn't say, what is Skrillex's real name? And it didn't say, what is the music, you know, artist that was playing the song? It just said, what is his real name? And Google knew that you were in the music app, and it knew that the artist was Skrillex, and it pulled that information. And then another really cool one was you're in an article from a random website, and it has a picture of an actor, and somehow Google can figure that out, and you can call up Google Now and it will take that picture and it'll match it and it'll give you more information. It's clever, man. And I don't want to get into the news, but Mark Gurman had the scoop that Apple wants to make Siri more Google Now-ish. But Google's stepping up their game with this.
This is just the epitome of Google. Like, this is what makes me have that thought of, should I get an Android phone? And because of features like this that are just so out of the water cool that it's just, it's insane what they do and how they're able to do it. And I think it just highlights a division of goals between Google and Apple. Apple makes great, great hardware and beautiful hardware and beautiful interfaces, but they just don't seem to have this computational power. And I don't know if it's because they've directed their resources in the other way or if they just aren't motivated to solve these problems. And boy, it's so tough as a nerd to want all of Google's services to just be inside of Apple's devices and their OS and the integration there. And it's just,
yeah,
like,
I know.
Guys.
And they're close. I mean, the Google apps are pretty phenomenal for iOS, but it's that baked OS integration,
yep,
that you wish that you could take advantage of sometimes on your iOS device.
It's like, do I want to run Android M on my iPhone?
Oh man, that would be, if only Cody.
I would like to try that. I mean, I think I like Apple's design aesthetic and some of their user interface choices better, but man, these services that Google has are just, they're killer. They're
but
so
you
good.
You want to know the problem with Android M is, even if you wanted a phone like this, you know how hard it would be to get a true version of Android M?
There you go.
Because all these great hardware devices, you know, from coming out from Samsung and LG, they're all going to have their crud and cruft all on top of it. And the only way to get true Android M is to go with their Nexus. And sometimes the Nexus isn't the best hardware. Sometimes it, you know, some of these Nexus devices have had pretty bad cameras and, you know, not the most amazing phone. And it sucks. You know, it's still a problem.
I don't want a plastic phone. I just don't want a plastic phone.
I know. So
also Apple Pay.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. You meant Android Pay.
Android Pay. Yeah.
Come on. They couldn't have called it.
Just
something.
Call it in Google Wallet again.
Yeah. Come on. You couldn't have just called it something a little more diverse. You even copied the UI. They copied the UI almost to the T, just like when Samsung copied the fingerprint UI. But there is some subtle differences. One thing that I've noticed is, so on Apple Pay on your phone, you just have to put the phone close to it and the Apple Pay thing comes up.
Yeah, you have to unlock it with Android
Pay.
Yes,
with Android Pay you have to unlock first. And yes, there are devices that have fingerprint sensors on them that will you know, help you unlock it faster, but you do have to unlock it first before tapping it, so it isn't as convenient.
That, I think, is the killer thing of Apple Pay. Like, tons of people have corporate phones and they have long ass passwords on their phone to type in.
Oh yeah.
Like, they're not going to want to do that. There is, by having to unlock your phone, they've automatically created a huge barrier to using it. Like, they've created step one. And with Apple Pay, there is no step one. There is just step zero. And now with Android Pay, they've created this step on top of, and I think it's going to be detrimental to it.
But if they copied Apple and almost every other thing about this, why couldn't they? I'm curious as to why couldn't they do that where it just wakes up?
It's because they don't have the hardware control.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yes, because there's different generations of NFC chips on all these devices. You're absolutely right, Cody. Great point. They don't have the hardware control, and that must really suck for them. Unless they come out with a Nexus, you know, later on, and that has the exclusive way of, you know, not having to unlock it. But again, everything is fragmented. It's kind of a joke.
Are we at the M of this?
Oh my God, I can't believe you said that.
Man, I'm good today. Just throwing them one after the other.
Google.com/design, there was a pretty cool video, you know, of different people from Google explaining, you know, how they've, you know, iterated on material design, which I really love material design. So that's worth noting. One thing that I forgot to put on our outline, Cody, Inbox is now for everybody. Google Inbox is for all, and they added some last-minute features.
Oh, they had. Did.
Yes.
Oh, the trips thing, right?
Yes, but more importantly, undo send. You can send an email, and if you regret it, you have some time to undo it. So,
I had that for a couple of years. It's been in the Google Gmail labs for quite a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah, did you not? So in Gmail, I don't know where it is in inbox now, but in Gmail, you can go to settings more or settings advanced, and then there's a labs tab that essentially just has like all of these features that you can enable that are like in beta mode testing, like they're not officially supported. And one of them that I used for a long time has been this like undo send. I mean, I rarely use it because I don't actually access email on desktop almost ever, but I've used it a few times via the web Gmail client.
Well, now that we're on the topic of email, Cody, I might as well go into some email news.
Wait, we haven't talked about Google Photos.
Oh my God!
Like, oh, the biggest God thing of the day we haven't talked about.
Holy crap. What is wrong with us? Okay.
We'll us, you, not me.
I know. Scratch the email thing. That may need to be pushed. Google Photos. Wow.
Free, unlimited photo storage. And a brand new, never seen before UI.
Oh, God. I tweeted about that. I got really angry. They were trying to, they're like, oh, look it, you can zoom out and you see weeks, then you see years. And I was like, really? I was like, if you haven't copied Apple enough blatantly, you're going to copy the Photos app almost identically where you zoom out and you see the different years. And I understand there's some subtle differences.
Hey, you can select all in the Google Photos app, and you just can't do that in Photos.
Oh, yeah, so I can accidentally delete my entire library. That's a good one. That's a good
all my
one
files, bro. All my files.
I know. So, all right, so Google Photos, I'm really excited about. I've downloaded the iOS app, but I haven't launched it. But I'm excited that it's another free unlimited photo storage, and I am going to upload all my photos to it because you can never have enough different cloud backups.
Remember when you did that? Remember when you did that for Flickr when they gave you 1 terabyte?
Yes, that's still the case, Cody. But Flickr's uploader was real crap until recent, so I was having problems with it. But Flickr is still an option, 1 terabyte of photo storage. But yeah, I have no shame in uploading my photos in as many places as possible.
That's a good point.
And if they're going to give me free unlimited photo storage and I'm going to have a really nice, another nice Google app on my phone, I'm all for it. Some people are getting a little up in arms that it doesn't allow you to keep a local copy. It doesn't have that kind of, there's no Mac app. So it's like you upload this stuff there and it lives there and that's all it lives there. So, you're going to have multiple backups, but, I am going to upload my entire library just so I can play around with it because it's really compelling, and I like having, here's why I like having a lot of my stuff on Google services, because Google is very, even though they're very open, as we all know it, and they've had a great relationship with iOS, and I have all of my music in Google Music, because Google Music allows you to upload 25,000 songs for absolute free, I actually have a very good, story about that. I as I said, I went to Pennsylvania for Memorial Day. On the drive up, all I did, none of my music was stored locally on my phone. All I did was go into my Google Music library, and I was able to stream all of every song that I wanted throughout the entire trip. LTE held up great, never had any buffering issues. Of course, I can download things offline, but it's great. But it's the opposite with Apple. You put yourself in Apple buckets, and you're locked in. That's it. You're locked in.
Yeah. But see, all of their buckets are like nice and the same size and the same color and shape. And that's not the case. You got like a weird triangle shaped Flickr bucket and then like a circle Google bucket and like a Picture Life I forgot all my shapes, but like, that's why I like sticking with Apple, is there's a uniformity and consistency across their apps and their design and how things work, which predictable. Like, you know what you can expect from each of Apple's services, and it's just Google hasn't had the greatest reputation for keeping things alive. And I think they've changed that a little bit because they finally decided, like, what are we going to do? What are our products going to be? And they have a vision. But I don't know. Like, I also hate jumping from, I know you do this, jump from silo to silo to silo. I hate that movement. Like, I'm still in iPhoto because I don't want to move everything to Photos because I'm too lazy to, like, move everything over. And I don't like the idea of my things being in multiple places because as features change over here and features change over here, all of my data just starts to get really fragmented, and I hate that.
I understand your point of view, Cody. I understand your point of view, but I don't know. Maybe it was when I did switch to Android for a brief moment that I realized, you know, that, I don't know. I like their services, and I'm nerdy enough to you know, to jump between Apple and Google services. And I'm now I have this thing in the back of my mind, like as amazing as Android is progressing. And I understand that I'm really into Apple now, but there is that chance that I may want to try Android back again. I may want to go a generation on the Android end.
This only free unlimited photo storage only just like underlines how freaking ridiculous it is that Apple only gives us 5 gigabytes of free storage.
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
If they have to go on that stage and say, here you go, just do whatever you want, like, as unlimited storage, here you go. But I don't think they're going to do it, and they're going to look ridiculous if they don't. Every other big tech company with products has it. Amazon has it. Google has it. Everyone has it except for Apple.
I don't think Apple is going to go free.
I don't think they'll go free.
They're scared that they don't have the data centers to handle it, and they're scared that they don't have the software and the server know-how.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think Photos is a shift there. Like, I think Photos was them saying, hey, we know how to do cloud services, look at this, but still they're stuck in the old Apple of like, oh, we're going to nickel and dime you on our services, but, and then we're going to charge humongous amounts for our devices. And it's just like, guys, it's not the environment of the tech industry right now. Like, data should cost nothing. If you want us to come and use your services, you should provide that for free. Like, I would be totally okay if Apple gave a reasonable charge amount for unlimited data. Like, I would be fine with that. Google is free. They've always been free, but they're also, like, probably using all of your photos that you put into Google Photos for ads or something, even though they say that it's private. But, like, they're chomping data with that. Like, that's the reason Google is so smart and can do things like Google Now on Tap, is because they have all of this data to compute, even if it's anonymous or not. Like, they have the raw materials to do huge operations like Google Now. Apple, I don't think, is going to be able to do that. So they're going to have to charge something, and I'm fine with that. But, like, freaking $20 a month for a terabyte? No. Like, $20 a year for unlimited? Okay. Something like that they need to do. I'm fine to pay, but just, gosh, make it reasonable.
So as much as Google put out some great stuff, I have a big bone to pick with them. And
yeah. Now that I've ranted about Apple, you rant about Google.
Google is pissing me off, and I don't know if they're aware of it, but...
Oh, they are.
I've tweeted about it, like, maybe 3 times, and I'm surprised people aren't unfollowing me in droves, but their YouTube embed policy or the way YouTube embed videos play on iPad has changed. So on iPhone, still, when you click, someone embeds a YouTube video on their blog, you click on it, it plays full screen on your iPhone. And of course, on your computer, you have control as to, you know, full screen or anything. And the way it used to play on the iPhone is very similar to how it worked on the iPad. If someone embedded a YouTube video, you would hit play, and then it would eventually kind of give you that Apple player. It kind of give you that Apple progress bar and play in the full screen. Yeah. So that's not the case anymore for iPad. And for a moment, I thought it was just for, like, certain YouTube videos. But I'm almost positive at this point that, I mean, unless it's changed over the past 24 hours, if someone embeds a YouTube video on their website on an iPad and you hit play, not only does it not give you the Apple the Apple kind of full screen icons or anything like that. It pulls up the YouTube controls, but they've removed full screen, and the YouTube controls don't really work well with touch, so you can't change the quality. It goes away too fast. So you are stuck watching this video, not in full screen, not possibly not in high def, and you have no choice but to either pinch to zoom, or not even sometimes. You have to watch this video in a tiny window. And that really pisses me off, because I use my iPad for when I get home, and I've saved all my articles to Instapaper, and I want to just digest and read and watch all these videos and movie trailers. And now I can't do that nicely unless it's like a Vimeo link. And it, like, shame on Google for doing this. I don't know if this was intentional so that they can get more people into their YouTube app, but it's just a shame. And I hope that it's a misstep and that they revert. But I cannot enjoy videos on the iPad unless I find the link or I have to go into the YouTube app and search for it. And I know you don't use an iPad, so this probably doesn't piss you off, but it's...
I also don't, like, watch YouTube.
Really? You don't realize you watch YouTube? Like, people post YouTube video links. You don't just click... Like, someone posts a movie trailer, it's most likely a YouTube link or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think those are, like, the rare times that I do, but I'm always on my phone when I do that. I rarely have it, like, on, even in, even on my Mac.
Well, that's my ranting for the evening. And unless you have anything else, I'm ready to call it a show.
Yeah. So I guess we'd just like to thank our Patreon supporters. We have a after show coming for you at the end of this month. And then we'd also just like to thank everyone else for listening. And we'd love to hear feedback if you have any. You can find our show notes at diagnosticsandusage.com/19. And you can follow me, interact with me on Twitter at CP Coates. And you can do the same with Joe...
at Joe Caiati, C-A-I-A-T-I, and I also write at joecaiati.info.
And that's a wrap.
All right, Cody Coates, you have a good night.
Bye.